Hey there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 411. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line. Send an email on over to ken@thisshowisogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowisogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is thisshowisogay. And of course, go on over to that Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. We have an incredible episode for you this week with two amazing guests. Let me introduce the first one to you right this very second. Jay Tyler is a lyrically based Atlanta rapper known for his quick wit and fast-paced flow. Just like an hour and a half ago, he was again awarded the title of Best Musician of Atlanta by the readers of Georgia Voice for, I think, like the 14th year in a row, something like that. We'll talk about it. 1 month ago, he released his first EP entitled Prelude, and it is available anywhere fine music is sold. Right this very second, he is here with us, and he has a few things he would like to get off his chest for all of you in the back. Jay Tyler, welcome back to This Show Is So Gay.
Thank you so much. It's so good to be back.
Do you know, I was going to say to our listeners, I normally don't do this. I don't have someone on twice in 1 year, but it's actually been a year since you've been on the show.
Yeah, it's been a year, and it's so crazy how things happened within this whole entire year. So I'm glad that I could be on here, and since it's the episode 411, I'll give you the 411 on what I'm doing.
I love how different we are, because that didn't even occur to me. That was awesome. That was awesome. All right, just to catch up our listeners, in case they didn't hear you the first time around, tell everybody about the lyrical musical style of Jay Tyler.
Wow, I mean, where do I even start? I like to consider myself not really a rapper, but more of a lyricist. You know, like when everybody, when you tell somebody you're a rapper, I mean, a bunch of people assume that, you know, you can freestyle and you're like, you're just this huge type of verbally talented person.
Yeah.
And while I am, while I think I am, you know, I get my height of creativity through just writing and sitting down with a pen and paper, traditionally writing a song. You know, I'd like to consider myself a songwriter versus more of like a rapper, you know what I'm saying? So I started writing songs, you know, early when I was like 7 or 8, and it was like little country songs. You know, I grew up on country, and so yeah, I just started writing songs, and in high school got into more genres and exploring different music styles, and never occurred to me that I would be sitting here from South Georgia being a rapper, you know?
Yeah. So, what was that big moment where it did occur to you? I feel like there was that one pivotal point where you just said, oh, this is it. This is what I want to be doing.
Yeah, absolutely. So I remember talking to you last year. This girl in high school told me I would never be a rapper. So I went home and wrote my first verse. And I think that was the moment that I found the path.
Yeah.
That I wanted to go down lyrically, because with rap and with, I guess, talking fast, you can get more creative with how you say things, and like rap and fast-paced lyrics, they're metaphorically enhanced more than any other writing style. And I think that that's my niche, you know. I think that I can flow really well with different types of metaphors, and you have to sit and actually look at my lyrics to understand what I'm saying. But yeah, I just think it's amazing. I think that was the pivotal moment for me, though, was writing that first verse and just falling in love with it.
This time last year, you did not have an EP out. Now you do.
Yeah.
Let's talk process for the start. Talk to me about, I feel like there were more than these 6 songs and you had to whittle them down. You got a lot in you.
Yeah, I do. I have a lot in me, but I didn't intend on having an EP at all, you know. My manager and producer who produced Live Out Loud that we talked about last year, we just got together again and started talking ideas and talking this and that, and it just kind of got pushed off to the side, you know, and like we were just like, yeah, let's just figure out how we can do this. And around the time last year, I went through a huge breakup.
Yeah.
And, you know, Ryan, my manager, was the first person that I called and was talking to about it. And initially, you know, as soon as I got off the phone with him, he sent me an instrumental, like, I want you to write to this. I want you to get out everything that you just told me. I want you to write to it. So when I heard the beat, you know, I just felt pain and knew that I had to write about it because it could help other people. And I just couldn't get it out. So I started writing this song with my friend Eric Nathan. And yeah, all of a sudden I sat here with one of the songs on the EP called Why, and it's featuring Shay here in Atlanta. She's an amazing singer. And, you know, I just knew that it would help. So not only did that song just like kind of lead into an EP, but there was just all of this different types of angst and like energy that I got from writing this song Why, that I had to get other songs out. And you know, we just literally spit them out. I think we started writing towards like November, December of last year, and the entire EP was done around March or April, and just we were just planning everything. So we just shot for June to plan everything, have a CD release show at the Hard Rock here in Atlanta, and it couldn't have gone any better. You know, I'm so proud of Prelude and of the BSE team that was behind it, that helped make, you know, my dream come true with this first album.
I want to hear more about that party. I mean, that had to have just been the most incredible night for you.
It was one of the night, and I'm getting like goosebumps just thinking about it. Yeah, if somebody would have told me, you know, 10 years ago that, you know, you're going to be able to be on stage doing what you want to do and having the people that care about you the most, you know, watching you do your dream, I would have called you a liar.
Yeah.
But just working for it, you know, it was one of the moments that I was like, wow, like I'm really doing this, you know? Yeah, my parents, who've never seen me perform before, they drove up to Atlanta for the show. I had all of my label, my BSC family was there. They were helping me put the show on, like opening for me and like running the backstage. Like, it was incredible. I had people come like from everywhere to surprise me. And that was like one of the best moments too. It was just like getting that surprise and, you know, having people from everywhere, you know, care about you and want to hear you and be a part of a special night. So it meant a lot. It was one of the best nights of my musical career. I will say that.
Tell me what your mom said when you saw her for the first time after you performed.
Oh, geez. It was tears,
yes.
tears. Like she couldn't get anything out. Like we all walked backstage before I was going on, and we did a prayer circle, and my manager invited my parents backstage and, you know, some of my close friends backstage, and, we all held hands, and she couldn't even be there for the prayer because she was crying. But you know, like she sees how much I love to do this, you know, and I think that was one of the moments that, as you know, I tell them about my shows all the time. I'm like, oh, I just did a show here and it was great. I did a show there and it was good. You know, I think that it was overwhelming for her because like she knows that I'm up here doing my dream, but for her to actually be to actually see what I was doing back home in my bedroom, you know, to actually see it on stage, you know, after some work has been done to it, I think that it was a great moment for her and for my dad to see everything and see, you know, that I really am passionate about this. And yeah, it was just an amazing moment. She couldn't do anything but cry.
I love it. I love it. Again, listeners, we are here with Atlanta-based musical artist Jay Tyler. Let's put you on the therapist couch for a minute. I'm going to ask you about a couple songs off this EP, and you are going to tell our listening audience what these songs say about Jay Tyler. It's going to give us some insight into your brain. You ready?
All right, let's go.
All right. What does the song Dance With Me say about Jay Tyler?
It definitely says that I just want to have fun and dance. You know, I wrote the song, actually, it's a funny story about Dance With Me, because I had 5 songs done. You know, the EP was completely finished. And all of a sudden, my manager called me up one morning and was like, hey, I have this beat that I think you might like. We can put it on your EP if you want. But if not, don't worry about it. But, you know, I can't help but hear you on it. So it's like, you know, like I'm kind of you know, happy with these five songs, but let me hear the beat. And as soon as I heard the beat, I just immediately jumped up and started writing. I was like, whoa, like, this beat is insane. And so that's how Dance With Me came. It just literally made me want to dance. So, yeah, Dance With Me is more about just having fun and dancing and seeing the shy people and people that are, like, a little timid and scared of life. Just have fun and dance with me. Like, we're all having fun in the world. Like, let's just get together and dance.
Nice. Nice. Let's do one more. Yeah. One more. What does the song, it's my favorite one, Paradise Baby, what does that say about Jay Tyler?
That I'm in love. No, I'm joking. I wrote Paradise Baby with the imagination of somebody being like a vacation. And I think everybody who's ever been in love feels that way when they look at somebody who, you know, is their whole entire world. They just look at somebody and like, yeah, I feel like you are my escape. And I think I embodied that in that song. I think it's just like a fun, summery type of song that just makes you feel good, you know, whether or not you're in love or not. It just makes you feel good, and it takes you to a place of, you know, paradise.
I love it. I love it. How about that time when, you know, just a few hours ago, you won your 14th consecutive award?
It's insane. I can't believe it. This is, it's my fifth year winning Best Musician. Atlanta, people of Atlanta have nominated and voted me Best Musician 5 years in a row. And, you know, the first year, I couldn't believe it. The second year, I still couldn't believe it. And then the third, fourth, and fifth year, I'm just, like, still taking it in. Like, I have a community of people here in Atlanta and, you know, everywhere that just adore what I'm doing. And that's everything that I've ever wanted ever since I was, a little kid. People that, you know, can get behind me and listen to my music and let me know that I changed their life in some way. That's all I'm meant to do. You know what I'm saying? Like, if I don't make it on the stage at Madison Square Garden, I know that I am doing what I want to do now, you know, here in Atlanta or here, you know, traveling the United States, doing what I'm doing. I think that last night made me realize that I'm not just doing it because I'm a dreamer. I'm doing it because of everybody else that has a dream and that's out there making it happen, you know, that has ever been told no and has never, you know, been told that they're good enough or talented enough, you know, like everybody can do it. I mean, if you listen to me, I'm skinny, gay, white rapper, you know, none of that mix as well, traditionally. So I think that I just say, like, whatever the stereotypes that you have set that are going for you, please break them because, you know, I'm doing everything I can to do my part, especially with the LGBT people that have been so supportive. You know, we get a lot of discrimination just because of who we are. And I feel like I don't feel that way. And so I just want to inspire everybody, whoever they are, that no matter what you want to do and where you want to go, you can do it no matter what, because I mean, look at me, you know? So, this past couple of hours have been insane, absolutely insane. And, you know, I'm just doing what I want to do, and I can't complain.
I love it. When you win your 14th consecutive one in 2026, you're going to be like, oh, Ken totally called it. Ken called that one.
I'm going to call you up and I'm going to say, Ken, you predicted it.
Oh, I'm so good at this. What's coming up next for you, sir?
Well, I'm doing a couple of little things. I have a couple of artists here in Atlanta who I have a couple of songs on their albums, little features. A songwriter never stops writing, so you never know what could happen, you know?
I'm going to ask you the question. I just asked this a few episodes ago to Kirsten Palladino, who publishes Equally Wed magazine right there in Atlanta. Sell our listeners on Gay Atlanta. Why should we come visit you all?
Oh, Atlanta is the mecca of drag. It's the mecca of LGBT people. We just got Rainbow Crosswalks here in Atlanta, which is pretty cool. But yeah, it's just a different type of atmosphere. You know, like Atlanta Pride is one of the biggest prides. And the reason why it's in October is so that everybody can come to celebrate Pride, but also it's like coming out day. We have ours near that. So yeah, Atlanta it's a whole different place. It's you get the Southern hospitality of, you know, the South, but you also get, you know, the fast-paced moving city that you do like in LA and New York and everything. It's cool. It's to have Atlanta be a part of that, be a mix of everything that, you know, it's just a melting pot. People come from all over and they become family here. So yeah, Atlanta's just one big old happy place.
I love it. I got to get back to Atlanta. Listeners, this is what we need you to do. You can stroll on over to jtylermusic.com. By the way, within a second and a half, you're going to see his tongue. That just happens right there on the website.
Because why not, you know?
There's more that happens after that. I'm just saying, it's the first couple of seconds. jtylermusic.com. And of course, you can get his new EP, Prelude, iTunes, Spotify, all other digital markets. You must go pick it up. Now, I almost didn't want to ask you what's coming up next for you, because one of the things that I've learned, even in putting my book out a few months ago, was everybody just says, what's next, what's next? My fear in that for you, my friend, as it was for me, is that that question takes you out of this current moment. And my hope for you is that you are fully in the present right now, because you've put out there some great music. It's a huge accomplishment. You will always have this EP. Of course, you will have more projects in the future, but it is so, so important to sit back and take pride in what you've accomplished. And everything that I see of the words and the energy that you put out there just shows me that you are in the present and you are appreciative and you are just so alive right now. But it's a great accomplishment, and I hope you feel that.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I definitely do. It's taken a lot for me to get to where I am. You know, I've battled everything, and just to sit here and look at a copy of my first EP, you know, physically, and like the first 48 to 36 hours of having my album out, I've literally been contacted by absolutely every single person that I think I know.
Yeah.
Just letting me know how amazing my album was, and like how their favorite song is this, or like, they're so proud of me. It's overwhelming, and I can't even begin to explain it. I'm still trying to catch up, actually, in the moment. You know, I feel like I'm so behind. I feel like, you know, people from everywhere are just hitting me up with all these encouraging messages, and it just makes my day. You know, every single time that I see a message that I've at least touched somebody, even in different countries, like I've gotten people in London and people in like Russia who have messaged me and are just like, yeah, I'm a huge fan. And it's just incredibly humbling.
There it is.
Incredibly humbling.
There it is. jtylermusic.com. The EP is called Prelude. Everybody go pick it up. And Jay Tyler, please keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me again. It was so good to be on the show.
This beat makes me want to dance.
Way you shake it, I like the way you bend it over but you don't break it. I like the way you jump, I like the way you pop it. I like the way you bring it up, I like the way you drop it. I like the way you rock, I like the way you roll. I like the way you lose your mind, the way you lose control. I like the way you strut, I like the way you bounce it. I like the way you sway, yeah, so astounding. Feel the rhythm in your system, take you on a ride. I wanna see you move your body like it's Friday night. We start to move and get in a groove and everything's alright. Step to the beat, follow my lead, it's just you and I. Like MJ, I wanna rock with you. Just wanna keep going, I don't wanna stop with you. And it takes two to tango, so grab my hand and let's take it to the floor.
Dance away, dance away, dance away, goodbye. Caress me, it's a party jamboree. Move your body, it's hypnotic as you wanna be.
I like the way you swing your hips, I like the way you step. I like the way you up the beat, bitch, you ain't out of breath. I like the way you know the lyrics to every song that's playing, and how you whisper every word and you ain't mess up yet. I like the way you boogie, I like the way you grind. I like the thing you do that makes me blow my mind. I like the way you know you're sexy in the ring of doubt. I like the way you look, the way that you get down. Feel the rhythm in your system.
All right, folks, and we are back with another incredible guest for this week's episode. Let me introduce her to you. Amber Cantorna is an author, a speaker, a musician, and a coach with a passion for helping LGBTQ people through their coming out process, especially our brothers and sisters who come from conservative faith communities, which we are going to talk all about. She is the founder and president of Beyond, a nonprofit organization dedicated to providing LGBTQ people with the resources and support that they need in order to live freely as their authentic, true selves. Her musical talent has taken her around the world, performing both as a solo artist and in multiple musical groups and worship teams for churches, Bible study groups, community functions, and public events. Her writing has been featured in the Huffington Post's Religion column, Publishers Weekly, Outfront Colorado, Liberal America, and other writing mediums. Her memoir, her book, it's coming out. It's called Refocusing My Family, Coming Out, Being Cast Out, and Discovering the True Love of God. It will be released on October 1st, 2017 from Fortress Press. So exciting. We're going to talk about that too. But first, she is here with us. Amber, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Thank you so much. Wow, that was quite the introduction. I'm honored.
We have so much ground to cover, Amber. Are you ready?
I am so ready.
I would think that we should probably start with your upbringing. It was perhaps a little bit different than many guests we have had on this show in the past.
I would think that would be true. I was, raised really in kind of a conservative Christian bubble. I was born in Montana, but then quickly moved to California at the age of 3 when my dad took a position at Focus on the Family. And he has continued that position all my life and still works there to this day. And so that really laid the foundation of everything with how our family was raised and taught and, you know, the things that we believed and valued. And so I was homeschooled all my life, K through 12. I was really kind of cocooned in this Christian, but which Colorado Springs is anyways. We moved to Colorado Springs when Focus on the Family moved there in 91. But really, that city in itself has so many conservative Christian organizations that homeschooled was normal, Christian was normal, conservative was normal, you know. And so that was kind of the culture I grew up in and very much shielded and protected from what you called the outside world, you know, or people that were not Christians or not conservative. And so really, that was my whole experience growing up.
What did you know about Focus on the Family as a child?
You know, what I was taught was that this was the best upbringing you could have. You know, my mom would always tell me, Amber, you should just be so thankful for the kind of family that you have because so many people don't have this. You know, and in a lot of ways, she was right. We had a great family. We had great bonding, you know, everything was very family oriented, very family based. My dad was always at all of our recitals and productions to as much as he possibly could when he wasn't traveling. And so the support of our parents in that aspect was very, very strong, a very strong unit. And so I never had any reason to question it. And I think because I was so sheltered, I saw the world through the way that I was taught to see the world, which right. was, you know, we kind of have these keys to the kingdom of God, and we need to kind of help everybody else have the same keys. And, you know, we have all the answers, and we are right, and there's really no room for questioning or doubt or looking outside of that certain spectrum that we had.
It's so important that we just pause right here, right? Like, we've been talking about Focus on the Family for decades and decades, and in a way that perhaps is not the most positive here in the LGBT community.
No,
I think we have to even just dial this back, and you are the perfect person to talk about this. There are actual people who work for this organization, and they are not the devil. They could be our parents, and we love them.
Exactly. And there are other people, you know, since I have come out and away from this life, I have met other people that are gay and have worked at Focus on the Family themselves in the past. And so I am not the only one like this. You know, I may be one of the only ones that has come out gay with a daughter who, you know, as my dad has been, you know, been an executive there for so long and such a prominent role. But I have met several other people that have worked there for some period of time in their lives and have now come out as gay are married to a same-sex partner and fully embracing and loving life, but still processing, you know, the harm that was done to them because of what they were taught to believe about themselves.
You know, I have said this so many times over the past 9 years on the show. I have absolutely no tolerance, Amber, for anybody who is out there in the world saying, oh, everybody just needs to come out. It's going to be fine. It won't have repercussions. We live in a different world now. That's just not true across the board.
No. Not at all.
And that was not your experience.
No, and it's not the experience of thousands of other LGBT people. You know, I mean, so many people, even just since I shared my story publicly on a blog post, I have had so many people reaching out to me with similar stories because maybe their dad didn't work at Focus, but they were raised on Focus principles. You know, they were raised on James Dobson's parenting principles. They were, the Adventures in Odyssey was prominent in their home and they listened to that. And so they were still, they still had these ideas and, you know, being filtered into their home as well. And so it's not just my story. This is a story of thousands and countless people across not just the nation, but around the world. I mean, I've had people contact me from all over the world with similar stories. So this spreads far and wide, and it's far from being a thing of the past.
I have not yet read Refocusing My Family. I will on October 1st, 2017, but I would have to imagine that you had points where as you came to accept your sexual orientation, you thought, huh, this is a bit at odds with what I was taught.
Oh my gosh, yeah. And that's enough to drive a person crazy, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, because it's so at odds with what you were taught to believe, not only about the LGBT community, because that, you know, that was like so far outside of what, like, that was the worst thing you could possibly be. And so for that suddenly to be like inside of you, it was such a huge war to be at odds within yourself, you know, and that creates so much self-loathing and so many problems when you are taught to hate something and then that something is you, you know. And so people struggle with all kinds of just turmoil. It just feels like a war is going on inside you that you can't escape. And you can't tell anybody because they believe that LGBT people are horrible sinners and, you know, possessed by the devil or going to hell. And, you know, and so when that suddenly becomes you, you just, it's so isolating in the conservative faith communities. And so that's one thing I'm really hoping to do with my story is shed a light on that and help them realize that this is way more common and prominent than we would ever think, you know, because there's so many people that are going through this and that they, there's so much hope, you know, even in the midst of all that I've gone through in my own story and the loss that I faced, there's so much hope. And it's this weird intersection of I've lost more people and more friends and community than I ever have in my life or than, you know, you would ever imagine a person could. And yet at the same time, I am still more happy and more free and more comfortable in my own skin than I ever have been before in my life.
What always rips me to shreds is just the very false choice, and we've heard this from so many of your colleagues on the show, between, all right, well, you have to choose. You got to choose, Amber. It's either your sexual orientation or it's your faith. And they can live in the same place.
Yes, exactly. But when you're taught that you have to make a choice, it's, I mean, it's like dividing yourself in half,
right.
You know? And I had had such a close relationship with God all my life, and I knew I couldn't just let that go. But also I couldn't deny that there was something going on inside of me. And it took me a lot longer to realize than the average person because I was so sheltered away from, you know, diversity. And so I was raised in the purity culture that taught you true love waits and you just save yourself for marriage. And if you just wait and you do all the right steps and you do all these things, then at the right time, God is going to bring along your knight in shining armor and you will be happily ever after, you know? And so I believed all that. That's what I was taught. And it was kind of, you know, for the most elite Christian, this is what good Christian role models do. And I had the whole purity ceremony at age 13 and wore this ring and signed this covenant. And so you just are taught to believe that that's the appropriate response and what is expected of you, you know, especially as, you know, kind of a role model to the community. My friends looked up to me for what my dad did and who my family was. And that pressure gets to you after a while, you know, it's hard to get to a point where you feel like you have to wear this facade all the time, which is really what happened, because everybody's looking to you to be an example and you can't be honest with them about what's really going on inside. And so I struggled for years with depression and anxiety and all these things that I could never pinpoint what was really wrong, what was really causing all this until years later. And I have very few people, I could probably count them on one hand, that are still in my life now that knew me before I came out. But you, if you were to ask them, they would say, you're a completely different person. Like before you came out, you were always wrestling with something. You just were always struggling. And since you've come out, you're just so happy and so free and so light. And so that's just so validating to hear, you know?
More importantly, where is that purity ring right now? Please say that you own it.
I do.
Yay. Where is it? It's in the house somewhere.
It is in the hope chest that was also given to me on my 13th birthday that was, you know, meant to be filled with all these hopes and dreams for your future marriage and family. And I collected things for a number of years. And ironically enough, you know, even though things panned out way different than my family expected, that hope chest now holds memorabilia from our wedding.
Oh.
And that's what we've chosen to put in there. And it's in our bedroom. And, you know, it did still hold some of those things of the past. And I have photos of all that that are shared in the book as well.
I love that. Again, listeners, we are here with Amber Cantorna, author, speaker, musician, and also the founder and president of Beyond. Tell our listeners about Beyond.
Well, Beyond is something that I have founded kind of out of my own story in my own life, because there is a growing number of organizations helping LGBT people that come from faith communities, but there's not a lot of resources to help them specifically through their coming out process. And through my own experience, I know how hard and how isolating it is when you come from conservative background or faith communities that teach, you know, how God is anti-gay and you can't be gay and Christian and you can't be gay and have a faith. And so I know from my own experience how incredibly isolating that is. And if you don't know that other people out there like you exist, you know, there's so many resources out there, but if you don't know that, it is the most isolating feeling in the world. And so I am starting this to really help people through their coming out process by giving them coaching and just giving them a listening ear of somebody that understands and has been there and can tell them it's going to get better and hope, and then help link them to the resources that will help them along the way, help link them to people in their area that can be supportive to them. And I'm specifically targeting those from conservative backgrounds or faith communities because they are at the highest risk for suicide. And, you know, being LGBT, you're already at an accelerated number for attempted suicide. But when you come from a highly rejecting family, that number is astronomical. It's already like four times more likely just by being LGBT. But then if you have a highly rejecting family, you're 8.4 times more likely than the other LGBT peers, not even in a straight peer, but just from the other LGBT peers that have no or low levels of family rejection.
Yeah.
Suicide rates are astronomical, and having come so close to that myself, I really have a passion to help others. So.
I want the ending of refocusing my family to be, and you can't give us the ending because everyone has to go buy it. That's the point here, folks, is that we want to read about your journey. But obviously, Amber comes out, and then your father says, well, I couldn't possibly be with Focus on the Family anymore, and now I'm going to be on the board of this new organization called Beyond. But that's not exactly what happened.
Not exactly, no. In fact, it was quite the opposite. And reputation and appearance were very high priority in our family. And so, unfortunately, their alliance to what they felt God demanded of them won out over their love for their daughter. Yeah. And so my dad continues to work at Focus to this day. You know, we haven't had contact in several years now.
Yeah.
And so that's been a very difficult journey, you know, to lose my parents and my only sibling and it's been a ripple effect. It's affected all of my relatives as well, my grandparents and cousins and aunts and uncles. And so it's really all biological family that I have that, with the exception of one cousin, you know, all of my biological family has turned their back on me. And so that's obviously been deeply devastating and taken a long time to process through and work through. But I am also very happily married to the love of my life.
Yeah.
And so it is an interesting dynamic and an interesting balance that that I walk of giving space for that continuing grief and loss process while also feeling so happy and at peace with who I am, you know?
Yeah. What's your advice for our listeners? So I think you're doing incredible work with individuals who are, you know, coming out in conservative Christian environments. Should we be in that situation where I'm interacting with your dad? Right, that could happen tomorrow. But people who are part of these organizations, you know, this is always the question we have. To what degree are we trying to enlighten, expand their horizons, change their mm-hmm. minds? Because I almost want to pivot back to the start of our conversation. These are people who truly believe that they are doing good.
Exactly. And really, it's just a matter of ignorance, really. They just don't have the right resources and the right tools to educate them more around this topic. And I think a lot of times fear is what holds them back, you know, fear of what other people will think, fear of what this could do to their job or their position, fear of what this would do to their faith, you know, because really it puts a crack in their faith of something that they've believed and held so long to be true. And if they find that's false, then that puts this rift in their faith that they start suddenly questioning everything else. And well, if I'm wrong about this, what else could I be wrong about? And so I think fear plays a huge factor in holding people back. And the more that we can facilitate gracious conversations, and the more that we can do that for, you know, people in our spheres of influence, the more that I believe we can change our culture, because our stories are what change hearts. You know, it's not going to be some news headline that changes somebody's heart. It's going to be their friend or their brother or their daughter or their son who comes out as gay, somebody that they deeply love, that is going to help push them to affect real change in their own hearts. But it's not always, you know, I don't think I will be the person that does that for my parents. You know, like, I think it's going to have to be somebody else that comes into their life and helps shed that light for them, because I don't think there's anything that I could do personally that would help them make that shift.
Do you think it's me? Am I the person who's going to affect them in that way?
I don't know. It might be.
Okay. I think it really is. I think you need a New York City gay Jew. I think I'm going to be the person who really affects your parents in that way.
Well, you just never know.
There you go.
And, you know, we are very grateful to have people that have gone into places like Focus on the Family and begun to generate some of these conversations, or, you know, some of these churches that are wanting to become more affirming. But again, they're afraid of what that's going to do to their job, to their church, to their congregation, to their financial resources, to, you know, and the more people that are going in and kind of creating these conversations, the more we're seeing some of these churches be brave enough to take that shift. And some of them have paid a very high cost, you know, some of them have lost a great deal. But I am so grateful to them for the work that they're willing to do. And some of them are complete allies that have no tie to the LGBT community whatsoever. And those astound me the most, because they're risking their own reputation and their own livelihood for the sake of a minority group, which is just amazing to me.
Amazing. When everyone picks up Refocusing My Family, Coming Out, Being Cast Out, and Discovering the True Love of God on October 1st, 2017, and they will read it in one sitting, because they, of course, will, and they close it at the end, what do you want them to be thinking about?
Well, I think it depends on the person that's reading it. It's really a twofold audience that I'm trying to reach. I am trying to reach LGBT people that have similar stories, because there's not a lot of, you know, there's a lot of books out there that talk about the clobber passages and dissect those and, you know, talk about that. But there's not a lot of people that just tell their story, especially female voices. And so really, I want them to have something to connect to where they say, oh, I'm not the only one. There are other people out there that have walked this road before me, and it's going to be okay. So really, I want to give them hope. But then I also want to reach the parents, the pastors, the teachers, the people that are in a place of influence, because I want to create those conversations for change where it's no longer just a news story or a headline, but it's an actual person that they can connect to with a real story and a real family, and they can see the damage that's being done to real people in the name of God. And so really, I'm wanting to help kind of create those conversations for change.
Are you sending a copy to your folks?
I probably will not.
Okay.
But I'm sure it
I'm doing
them.
It.
Well, go for it. Okay. I think somebody should.
Okay. It's going to be me. I'm telling
really,
you.
You know, that's kind of the most popular question I get right now. Is,
oh, is it?
Do your parents know about it? Not that, but do your parents know about it? And does Focus know about it? And my answer is, I really don't know because I have no contact with them. So I would assume they have heard something to some degree, but to what depth, I really have no idea. And I would assume that it will reach them at some point and they will hear about it. And I would hope that they could get to a place where they would be able to read it with an open heart and an open mind, because I think they would learn a lot. But I would imagine their first reaction would be anger of, oh, well, why are you sharing our personal story so publicly? And, you know, but I have tried to do so very graciously. Mm-hmm. I'm very honest. I don't hold back, but I also have chosen to not share my family's name or my dad's position at Focus or, you know, pictures of my family to respect their privacy. And so I've tried to, walk that line very carefully out of respect for their privacy, but also being very honest so that we can shed a light on the harmful behaviors that are causing so much harm to the LGBT Christian community.
One of the narrative threads that we've heard so much over the years and will continue into the future, I have no doubt, is individuals who have upbringings such as yours, when they encounter new people, you know, when they are forging a relationship, and you certainly, you got your knight in shining armor. You married her. She is right there. So I love that. That it can sometimes be difficult having that first conversation about, by the way, this was my upbringing. What was your experience with that?
My wife came from a Southern Baptist community, so in some ways, some of our experiences are similar, and in some ways, they're very different, but she has always been nothing but supportive, and, you know, there were some pretty tough times in the beginning where, you know, I still had a little contact with my family, but it was very tumultuous, and it was very, there's just a lot of angst there and a lot of pain, and you know, the nights that I woke up sobbing, in the night from just horrible nightmares and things like that. And, you know, some of the decisions we had to make leading up to the wedding and a lot of that was very, very hard. And she's always been so supportive of not really pushing me one way or the other on how to deal with it, but understanding that, you know, of where I'm at and supporting me and however I decide to, whatever direction I decide to go with things. So she's just been fantastic all the way through all of that. And, you know, in recent years, I haven't had contact with them, but even through the whole book writing process, we'd sit, you know, I'd sit and write all day during the day, and then she'd come home and we'd analyze for hours at night and dissect and talk about life and the kind of the outside perspective from somebody that didn't know my past was refreshing, because she'd ask questions that I wouldn't normally think of and see it differently than I did by living it. So she's just been phenomenal through it all.
And she's right there on the cover.
She is.
I love it. I love it. Well, let's finish with some advice. We have our listeners out there. Should they find themselves in one of these situations, you know, they find themselves in a place where they feel like they have to choose between their family and their sexual orientation, or their faith and their sexual orientation, or any combination thereof. And certainly you've done so well to highlight the very real mental health risks that are presented in a lot of these situations, right? These real lived experiences.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What is step one? What is step one to start building a healthy life?
Well, I think the biggest thing is for them to realize they're not alone, you know, because that isolation is suffocating. And so realizing that they are not alone and building a supportive community, getting in touch with an affirming community, whether that's a church, whether it's an organization like Gay Christian Network or the Reformation Project, or, you know, or whether it's a parent that gets in touch with something like, there's a lot of resources available for parents of LGBT kids too, even those that come from faith communities. They've got secret Facebook groups and stuff that they can join and have support. And so there's really so many resources out there, and plugging into those makes a huge difference, and also creating a supportive community. That was the factor for me that saved my life, was having support around me. If I did not have that, I do not think I would have survived. I had found an affirming church in Denver, and that was the turning point of really being able to accept myself, because I was at my wit's end. And I drove from Colorado Springs to Denver every Sunday for 6 months before, and I came out in the midst of that, in the process. And then about a couple months after coming out, I moved to Denver once I saw how, you know, how poorly things went with my family and the road that it was going to take. I, as a method of survival, picked up and moved to Denver to be around a supportive community. And I really believe that that's what saved my life. So I think finding people that will support you and love you and affirm all of who you are, it makes the biggest difference in the world.
There it is. There it is. Listeners, you can learn more about Amber Cantorna by strolling on over to ambercantorna.com. On October 1st, 2017, Fortress Press will be publishing Refocusing My Family, Coming Out, Being Cast Out, and Discovering the True Love of God. It is Amber's story that she has put out there to all of you for an opportunity for all of us to pause and see one of our sisters' journeys and know that there are things that we can do to support each other, because surely that message that you just articulated of us all not being alone is a really important one. And you are doing it, Amber, graciously. And you have used that word a few times, and having reviewed, you know, having seen all that you're putting out there to the world, that is such an element of the energy that you put out there, that it is, you are doing it with grace, you are doing it graciously, and it is providing an opportunity for so many people to access not just your story, but the stories of so many of our brothers and sisters out there, and know that we really can be supporting each other, and you are doing a great thing.
Thank you so much. I will also add that I will be going on a speaking and book tour following the release in October, and so I will be going around the country. So look it up on the website of the list of events and see if I'm coming to your area. And if I'm not, contact me if you want me in your area, because we are still booking additional events as well, and lots more to come. So I would love to meet as many people as possible while I'm on the road.
There it is. Amber, have incredible conversations when you're out there. Just keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. We've had a great time today.
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, we do indeed have some time left on this week's episode, so let's get to the latest news out there. Most of our news has to do with the latest developments coming from United States President Donald Trump. In a series of tweets this week, he has banned transgender people from serving in the military. I know this is everywhere. Let's cover as many facets of this story as we can. Donald Trump has reversed an Obama policy allowing transgender people to serve in the U.S. military. In June of last year, President Obama asked the Pentagon to lift its long-held ban on transgender soldiers serving openly in the military. The Department of Defense was given until July 1st of this year to implement the policy, with LGBT advocates hopeful, we've been hopeful, that transgender soldiers would finally be able to serve openly. Well, the decision was delayed by Donald Trump's defense secretary, James Mad Dog Mattis, and the president confirmed this week via Twitter, because again, now we accept Twitter as an official means of communication, and that's not just a joke. Truly, Trump's staff has said, yes, Twitter is an official means of communication for this president. Well, via Twitter, the president confirmed that he would reverse the decision to put the ban back in place. He said this, again, via Twitter, quote, "After consultation with my generals and military experts, please be advised," again, I don't know who he's talking to, I guess just all of us, "please be advised that the United States government will not accept or allow transgender individuals to serve in any capacity in the U.S. military. Our military must be focused on decisive and overwhelming victory and cannot be burdened with the tremendous medical costs and disruption that transgender in the military would entail. Thank you." He signed off his tweet by saying, thank you. Well, predictably, this has caused all sorts of outrage, as it should. I actually didn't hear about this from the news. My best friend, Becca, who has co-hosted many episodes of This Show Is So Gay when we lived together, we co-hosted episodes up in the attic, and she sent me a text message saying, I think I just threw up in my mouth a little, and she linked to the article. I hadn't even heard about it. Well, the outrage is all over the place, not the least of which is from all of us who scoffed at the idea that Donald Trump was a friend to the LGBT community, and everybody else who said, no, look, he posed with this flag. He posed with the rainbow flag, and he held it upside down, and it was like scribbled "Gays for Trump" on it in some Sharpie by someone who didn't really have very good handwriting. But no, he's a friend to the gays. He's a friend to the gays. Ivanka is a friend to the gays. And then he takes to Twitter to ban the service of any trans person in the military in any capacity. This president who dodged, you know, serving many, many times, who claimed exemptions, who did not serve himself, is saying, I don't care that we have individuals who are courageous and who have honor and who want to serve this country in this incredible way. I am banning them. And he didn't say which generals he talked to. He didn't say what the conversations came from. Because indeed, a lot of members of the military have said, we just got to figure out some of the logistics of this. But indeed, no. On Twitter this week, Donald Trump has banned trans people from serving in any way in the military. Well, there will be challenges to this. The American Civil Liberties Union has threatened to take Donald Trump to court after he re-banned trans people from the military. They have said, you know what, there's something we can do here. They said this, quote, this is an outrageous and desperate action. The thousands of transgender service members serving on the front lines for this country deserve better than a commander-in-chief who rejects their basic humanity. Let us be clear, this has been studied extensively and the consensus is clear. There are no cost or military readiness drawbacks associated with allowing trans people to fight for their country. The president is trying to score cheap political points on the backs of military personnel who have put their lives on the line for their country. There is no basis for turning trans people away from our military, and the American Civil Liberties Union is examining all of our options on how to fight this. For any trans service member affected by today's announcement, please get in touch with us because we want to hear from you. Sarah Kate Ellis of GLAAD, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, said this, quote, President Trump today issued a direct attack on transgender Americans, and his administration will stop at nothing to implement its anti-LGBTQ ideology within our government, even if it means denying some of our bravest Americans the right to serve and protect our nation. Today further exposed President Trump's overall goal to erase LGBTQ Americans from this nation. Trump has never been a friend to LGBTQ Americans, and this action couldn't make that any more clear. Look at that. That is from Sarah Kate Ellis of the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation. So many more quotes out there. Cowardly attacks, calling this cowardly attacks. The Human Rights Campaign attacked the White House for a, quote, deeply troubling and patently unpatriotic assault on military families. They went on to say this, the HRC, Human Rights Campaign, went on to say, Trump and Pence should be working to ensure all service members and their families are getting the support and resources they need and deserve, regardless of their gender identity or sexual orientation. But this isn't just coming from the left. Right? The criticism isn't just coming from the left. It is coming from the right as well. Republican Senator John McCain, who we can't even put aside his horrific statement this week in support of really getting rid of healthcare for millions and millions of Americans, right when he just used his healthcare. But aside from that, focusing his comments in on banning trans people in the military, John McCain has publicly challenged Donald Trump's announcement that trans people will be banned. Senator McCain, who is chair of the Senate's Armed Services Committee, he hit out at the decision in a statement. He said this, quote, the president's tweet this morning regarding transgender Americans in the military is yet another example of why major policy announcements should not be made via Twitter. I do agree with that, Senator McCain. Senator McCain went on to say this, quote, the statement was unclear. The Department of Defense has already decided to allow currently serving transgender individuals to stay in the military, and many are serving honorably today. Any American who meets current medical and readiness standards should be allowed to continue serving. There is no reason to force service members who are able to fight, train, and deploy to leave the military, regardless of their gender identity. We should all be guided by the principle that any American who wants to serve our country is able to meet the standards, should have the opportunity to do so, and should be treated as the patriots they are. The Department of Defense is currently conducting a study on the medical obligations it would incur, the impact on military readiness, and related questions associated with the accession of transgender individuals who are not currently serving in uniform and wish to join the military. I do not believe that any new policy, this is Senator McCain, I do not believe that any new policy decision is appropriate until that study is complete and thoroughly reviewed by the Secretary of Defense, our military leadership, and the Congress. The Senate Armed Services Committee will continue to follow closely and conduct oversight on the issue of transgender individuals serving in the military. That is from Senator John McCain, who neither supports announcements being made via Twitter, nor does he support this policy change that President Trump has announced via Twitter. But the story does not stop there. A transgender Navy SEAL has challenged President Trump to tell her to her face that she is not worthy after he announced this ban via Twitter. I'm going to keep pivoting back to the fact that he announced it via Twitter, which is just so nutty to me. Navy SEAL Team 6 member Kristen Beck responded to Trump to say, quote, "Let's meet face to face and you tell me I'm not worthy." Kristen Beck was the first transgender U.S. Navy SEAL to come out back in 2013. The 51-year-old served for 20 years. She said this, quote, "Being transgender doesn't affect anyone else. We are liberty's light. If you can't defend that for everyone, that's an American citizen. That's not right." Kristen Beck left the Navy in 2011 and published her memoir, Warrior Princess, A U.S. Navy SEAL's Journey to Coming Out Transgender. She went on to say this, quote, "I was defending individual liberty. I defended for Republicans. I defended for Democrats. I defended for everyone." Unsurprising. Unsurprising that these kinds of reactions are happening. Another reaction is from Caitlyn Jenner. Caitlyn Jenner, who has espoused her Republican views to anyone who would listen and said at one point, oh, I could very much sway this administration. I can have some effect here. Well, Trump voter Caitlyn Jenner has lashed out at the president over this ban. She actually had some quotes there. She wrote, quote, "There are 15,000 patriotic transgender Americans in the U.S. military fighting for all of us. What happened to your promise to fight for them?" The LGBT Republican pressure group, the Log Cabin Republicans, also lashed out at the decision. Log Cabin Republicans President Gregory T. Angelo said this, quote, "This smacks of politics, pure and simple. The United States military already includes transgender individuals who protect our freedom day in and day out. Excommunicating transgender soldiers only weakens our readiness. It doesn't strengthen it. The president's statement this morning does a disservice to transgender military personnel and reintroduces the same hurtful stereotypes conjured when openly gay men and women were barred from service during the military's Don't Ask, Don't Tell era." And the final piece to the story, at least as I am reporting it, there are so many more facets to all of this. A new report indicates the Pentagon spends more than 10 times more on medication to help troops with erectile dysfunction than it would have done providing medically necessary costs to transgender troops. Despite President Trump citing the cost of implementing medical costs for transgender troops, comparing a study by the Rand Corporation from last year with the cost of providing Viagra and similar medication has shocking but unsurprising results. The study into the cost of providing transgender medical expenses estimates that it would cost $8.4 million, and according to a Military Times article, the Department of Defense spends $84 million on medications to treat erectile dysfunction. Again, that's $8.4 million for trans medical expenses and $84 million on Viagra. Where are our priorities? One story, a lot of different angles, more will develop because this just happened the day that we are recording this, but that's it for us. Our huge, huge thanks to Jay Tyler. He is putting great music out there to the world, so you must, of course, check out everything that he is doing. And our thanks to Amber Cantorna. Her book is available for pre-order right this very second. It is called Refocusing My Family, Coming Out, Being Cast Out, and Discovering the True Love of God. It's officially out on October 1st, but you can go on Amazon right this very second and place a pre-order. I urge you to do so. In the meantime, get out there. Go use your voice the way you know how to use it to make a difference for your LGBT brothers and sisters, for all of our allies out there. And while you're out there using your voice, while you're out there making a difference, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?